Well, two things that might help inflation: weaker jobs growth, and we'll take slower wage pressures. That would be nice too. And more oil. OPEC has agreed to pump more, but is it enough to really tackle inflation? Anyway, it's too little too late to slow down the Fed, it seems. That is why today we have equity markets positive and bond markets a bit nonplussed. And we've got non-farm payrolls tonight. That'll give us a swag of new figures as well. It's Friday, the 3rd of June, 2022. It's the morning call from NAB. Good morning. Well, it's been another day demonstrating the violent swings that can happen across all asset classes, particularly equities, which were well down yesterday. Today, though, well, the Nasdaq is up 2.7%. It closed this morning. The S&P 500 is up 1.5%. The Dow is up 1.3%. We've got rises in Europe as well, up 1% for the Eurostox 50 and for the DAX. Closed in the UK because they're doing royal stuff today. Not much movement in bonds, though, at least in the US. 10-year Treasury is up 1 basis point on fairly narrow trading today. 2 years haven't moved much either. Whereas in Europe, German and French 10-year bond yields are up 5 basis points, more than that in most of southern Europe. And oil is rising higher today, 1.7% for WTI, 1.5% for Brent. Brent is at $118 now. The US dollar has fallen fairly sharply as well. It's down 0.75% on the DXY, with the Aussie up 1.3%, the euro up 0.9%, the pound up 0.7%. So I'm not entirely sure why the markets have taken the direction they have today. Let's talk about it with NAB's Ken Crompton in Sydney. Well, I guess I can take a bit of a guess. I mean, it looks like equity markets are buoyed by this news around OPEC producing more oil, even though, you know, it hasn't kept the price of oil down today. And bond markets are having none of it. They still expect that the Fed is going to carry on regardless. So two different directions from the same set of data. Is that a fair summation, do you think, today, this morning?
I'd say that's pretty fair, Phil. There's certainly some sort of conflicting forces at play in the news overnight, but none of them particularly strong for the most part, really. It must be admitted, I guess, hence why treasuries have largely sat it out and drifted sideways. A little bit of steepening at the ultra long end of the curve. You can find some technical reasons for that in maybe some of the corporate results, where there might be some ultra long bond issuance next week. But really, the only sort of major news development really did come out of those that OPEC Plus meeting with that decision to increase and pull forward their production increases by about 250,000 barrels a day.
Yeah, that's right. But the bad news on that was Russia is going to be part of that quota. So they can up their output, but Europe and the US, the European part of it, the Russian part of it, Europe and the US won't be buying any of it. But I guess, you know, we assume that's going to be a portion of it. The Saudis are going to produce much more, and well, hopefully it's going to keep prices down, but it's not happened today.
No, that's sort of been the sting in the tail of that whole development. There was a sort of early reports on that came out yesterday during our time zone, and initially that did help Brent, you know, sort of sell off from around 116 down to $112, but as you noted in the open, we've ended up back around 117 already as the details came out, and there was that sting about Russia still being involved. And then also at the same time, there was further confirmation around what the EU was thinking in terms of its sanctions on Russian oil. A few more details around that, and markets and analysts have sort of viewed the net change as probably being not that significant. So those European sanctions have landed, you know, sort of roughly where we've been talking about, with an exemption for cargo coming in via pipelines. And then also at the same time, there was sort of a few more details around this proposed sort of insurance sanction on ships carrying Russian oil as well. So there was another factor that sort of took away any possible significant upside you'd kind of get from the supply increase.
Yeah, and look, it's not a huge increase. I think it represents about 0.5% of global demand. So it's no panacea, is it, when it comes to fighting inflation?
Exactly.
But I think also there's quite a drawdown on inventories, wasn't there? And so that's what's impacted the price of oil in the last few hours or so. But anyway, whatever it is, it's not going to stop the Fed. They're not letting go. 50 basis points for the next two meetings, at least. In fact, Lael Brainard has been saying as much. And beyond that, it's unlikely that they're going to stop then. It's, September and beyond.
Yeah, there had been a bit of a building sort of an interpretation in the market that although the next 250s sort of in June and July were definitely locked in, that the September meeting might see a bit of a pause. But certainly Brainard did hold the torch to that overnight. I mean, the sort of incremental moves that have managed to sort of appear in markets haven't been much. I mean, to be honest, I mean, there's still 40 basis points priced for that September meeting anyway. So, you know, it's not as if the market is pricing, you know, the Fed to pause post July, and you're still looking at pricing of an implied cash rate in the US by, you know, 2.8% at year end, which is still well into that zone of, you know, neutral that a lot of Fed members have been talking about. So, yeah, a little bit of incremental pressure there, but at the margin, it hasn't sort of moved things too much overnight.
Yeah, it is curious though, isn't it? The equity is still going up. I mean, we had the curious thing that Microsoft announced a profit downgrade. And immediately, they were saying it's largely because of the strength of the US dollar, and, you know, the fact that repatriating money from overseas is going to be less than expected because of the strength of the US dollar. But the market's, you know, I mean, Microsoft is actually up today, even though it's an unusual times when you can downgrade your forecast and you see your share price go up. But equity markets don't seem fazed by anything at all, do they? As though they are expecting, you know, we're going to get some good news around the corner somewhere, sometime.
Maybe. And I mean, you did sort of mention, you know, payrolls briefly before, and I guess we've had a little bit of a lead into that overnight with some data from ADP, and that did come in much weaker than expected. Now, I guess just like extending, you know, market narratives, you know, sort of too torturously to one night's actions, it's similar with the ADP payrolls. In the short term, that's considered a reasonably unreliable indicator of what the payrolls print that month will be. Obviously, a soft print there isn't sort of super encouraging. I mean, playing against that, though, we did get weekly jobless claims out of it as well. They've dipped.
Absolutely. And so they are falling. So we've got less jobs and less claims. That is a very confusing picture.
Yeah. So they've dropped a bit. I mean, within the sort of margin of sort of volatility, that survey, it's not significant. But it had been starting to maybe trend upwards. So the fact that's stabilised is positive. And I guess, you know, tonight I think consensus is still sitting around 325K for payrolls. But, you know, the interesting thing there is going to be, you know, sort of where earnings is sitting. That's been sort of in year-on-year paces, that's been running a little bit above 5%. You know, there was a brief scare in the earnings series a couple of months ago, which quickly disappeared. But obviously that's going to be the sort of key input for the Fed, with the unemployment rate, you know, potentially pushing, you know, 50 plus year lows.
It's interesting to see where this is all going, isn't it? Because some numbers out of the National Federation of Independent Business says more than half of small business owners had jobs open that they couldn't fill, more than half. So, you know, that points to a tighter labour market, doesn't it? So that's contrary to those ADP numbers. So there's companies that are saying that they're having difficulty filling jobs still. But then the ADP numbers also showed that the small businesses, so those people are saying having difficulty filling jobs, are the ones who are losing jobs. You know, most of the two-thirds of the job losses since February have come from companies with less than 20 people in them. So it's as though people are saying, well, we'll go and work for bigger companies because they might give us a better salary. And so maybe that's part of the wage inflation that we've been seeing. Mm. Many parts to this, aren't there?
Yeah, it's a complex picture. And I mean, you can sort of see that in the way the RBA is sort of having to try and analyse the wages and jobs market in Australia, you know, sort of changing the emphasis on the wage indicators they like to look at, because things like the WPI are going to be more aligned with people getting wage increases in, you know, in existing jobs, whereas some of those sort of higher frequency and GDP measures are starting to show sort of a different pace of increase, and that's one reason why they've had to switch focus.
Now, into June, of course, that means the Fed I don't know whether they would call this quantitative tightening. It's not really, they're just not renewing bonds as they mature. So, I mean, the balance sheet will reduce very slowly. Maybe they'll do it faster down the track. We don't quite know the speed at which they'll do that. But even with just this, you know, non-renewal of maturing bonds, is that going to have any impact on, you know, as they sell, effectively, it's pushing bonds back onto the open market. What's that going to do to rates? Or is it too small and too slow to make much difference just yet?
It's probably in that category at the moment, a little bit too modest to sort of anticipate, you know, changes in price action in the short term. I mean, what it does, it's coming amidst a time where the Treasury has been, you know, scaling back issuance. You know, the sort of US fiscal position is running fairly strong. The Treasury's very short-term borrowing, so Treasury bills, they've been dramatically decreasing their use of those over the past over the past couple of quarters, and that's been enabled by very strong tax receipts. But the Treasury bills sort of play an interesting sort of lubrication function almost in some of the short-term money markets. So if you've got those being supply of those sort of being cut back at the same time, you've now potentially got sort of term Treasury debt increasing on the back of QT. The dynamics there could set up a bit of a crunch point a little bit further down the track, but it's a little bit too soon to see at the moment.
I mean, one to watch though. Yeah. All right. Now Australia's trade balance, that was the surprise number yesterday, wasn't it? Because it's widened up to 10.5 billion Aussie dollars, which is more than NAB had predicted, and NAB was quite a bit ahead of the consensus. So we had a big rise in exports, but quite a fall in imports as well. So I'm not sure, is that good news or is that bad news? I mean, we'll take the good news that we've got a stronger balance of trade, because obviously that helps GDP. But if a fall in imports, does that say something about consumption? And if it does say something about consumption, is that good news or is that bad news? If we're consuming less, does that mean we're going to have less of an inflation push? So many questions here.
Yeah, it does print quite a complicated picture. I mean, in the GDP data that we got a couple of days ago, I mean, obviously that dates back to Q1, but consumption strength was a decent part of that print. So, the consumption goods in the trade balance data, you sort of can't map them too closely through to GDP, but I guess it does indicate that there could be a bit of a change in trends there to some extent. I mean, the more notable detail was in some of the exports, actually, funnily enough. I mean, particularly with the border reopening, international travel beginning to be resumed, we started to see an increase in tourism exports there. Although I think we're still talking about 580,000 people sort of arrived in Australia during April. Much better than it had been a couple of years, but if you go back to pre-pandemic, we were pushing almost 1.75 million people a month. So there's still a long way to go there. So to the extent that that picks up again, that's probably going to see a little bit of upward pressure in the trade balance going forward.
Well, maybe we'd go around with we won't go just yet because it doesn't stop raining in Australia lately. If you're in New South Wales, anyway, certainly.
No, look, the Aussie. Yeah.
Yeah, wait for the weather to get a bit better. Look, El Nino. Wait till that's moved on. So the Aussie dollar very strong this morning. I mean, that could be related to those trade numbers, but I'm suspecting it's to do with the fact that we've got a weaker US dollar because we've got quite a fall on that today. The DXY index was up at 104.8 in early May, and it's down to 101.8 now. So, I mean, is that the direction now? Seems unlikely, doesn't it? But we've seen the euro showing strength, which seems curious because the ECB is, dilly-dallying a bit on getting those rates up to try and crack inflation. It's hard to imagine that the euro is going to keep on rising against the US dollar in those circumstances.
Well, I think those rate differentials point to a good chunk of the story in both those directions. Certainly the ECB is not talking anywhere near as hawkishly as other banks, and for good reason. Although, if you compare to where they were a couple of months ago, they're definitely much more hawkish. In terms of where the US dollar, that US dollar weakness, I mean, our FX colleagues that you talk to more often than me, they're very hesitant to sort of start to draw a trend line to extrapolate from this at this point. I mean, to the extent that it's been US rates moderation, I mean, sure, we've seen treasuries come down from 3.1 to 2.7, but you're back above 2.9 now, so those yield differentials are sort of starting to turn around a little bit. To the extent that it's about China reopening, that is happening, but we're still seeing that coming, amidst the sort of zero COVID becoming presumably even more entrenched now, given it's had some success. But the sort of longer run limitations around mobility and maybe economic performance have still got to be seen, what it's like when you've got massive populations in urban centres that need to be tested every 48
it's
hours.
It's very slow progress.
And that sort of thing.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So look, home loans for Australia today, down, I assume. Investment lending for April, they could be on the rise, perhaps. I mean, we've been talking about, you know, this dichotomy about, you know, rents might be going up, house prices might be going down. So great opportunity for investors. So we'll see. We'll be able to put that to the test, that theory to the test today. But look, it's the United States, isn't it? That's the key one tonight. We mentioned it already, the non-farm payrolls, and particularly the average hourly earnings up 5.5% year on year in May. So how are the job numbers themselves going? And are we seeing any weakness in that growth in earnings? We'd like to see both, wouldn't we? We'd like to see jobs down and earnings down a little bit.
I guess to the extent that that reduces pressure on the Fed, that would be the good outcome. Although I guess half the issue with inflation at the moment is the extent to which it's been a massive massive supply side shock. So the job side doesn't change that too much in the short term. So I think we'll still expect Brainard and particularly Mr. Bullard and colleagues like that to be out there pushing the drum for multiple 50s for a little while yet.
Nothing's going to stop them. All right, good to talk, Ken. Have a great weekend. We'll catch you again soon. Thanks.
Yes, thanks, Phil.
Nice one. And Sky is joining us on Monday morning. I'm back then too, of course. I'm Phil Dobby for NAB. See you then.